Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Appalachian Podcast. I'm your host, Billy Riddle. With me is the man who has 13 websites dedicated to his hatred for Paul Revere, the man who likes his drinks shaken, not stirred, Simon Winch.
Oh, dear. This is how we're going to start this one, is it?
Well, what do you mean?
You keep taking your cheap shots. I just happen to know people, Billy. I don't know what else to tell you.
You just happen to know everybody we ever come across. It's a little disturbing, but no less. We are back, and not this time necessarily in the Timcast IRL studios. We are here at the Barrel Room at the Rocky Mount Burger Company, a place we have done quite a few shows over the years. The most recent, if I can recall, would have been our show with Terrell Basham, and I wasn't none too proud of myself after leaving that one. He peer pressured me into drinking a little bit more than I kind of thought I was gonna
peer pressure, Billy.
Well, what can I say? The man had a watch that cost more than my vehicle. So if he's kind of in the mood to do something like we wanted to do something like that. So, it's been a while, but you know, huge thanks. It's awesome when you can come up here in the Barrel Room and you have the champion bringing you your food and your drinks. Went to go see him last weekend here at the YMCA, and it was a good time, but he ended up losing for whatever reason. Came out. Claire is a huge fan now.
I believe he lost because someone did an illegal move on his tights, dare I say it. And I think he may have got a wedgie.
I didn't know that was the – is that what you heard?
That's not what I heard.
Oh, well – I don't know where you're getting the information at.
Directly from Rick Reeves himself.
And those are the terms he used was...
He got high and tight, and someone's hand was involved in that particular motion.
Well, no less. Once again, here at the Burger Company, Brian, big thanks to him for hosting us here today. I wish we could have did things a little bit different. It was a really busy week. We wanted to come up here and hook up the speaker and let people listen, but we were having some technical difficulties. And I know with our guest here today, Nick Robertson, one of the guys we had on here last year, and they're getting ready to go back to spring training for pitchers and catchers. So we wanted to try and get him on here before that happened. You just got to take it as it can get. And we've been so incredibly busy, as you know. We have a couple of shows you haven't heard yet. I think I'm going to release this one next before our trip next week to D.C. So if you still want to help support that trip, you can go to our GiveSendGo at givesendgo.com/getontap. Planning on bringing a lot of people to this area, a lot of people with interest, you know, invest some stuff, some time, effort, and money. And you can do a one-time donation at Get On Tap for Cash App or Venmo. We appreciate everybody that's helped to this point in time. We got a lot of things cooking. Want to mention real quick, buddies at Rocky Mount Smokehouse are also a big supporter of the show. You know, Anastasia's, they've done a lot for us over, you know, the last few months and trying to set us up there for a good show we did. Being Libertarian with Chip Slate, he's been a huge partner, and we've brought on, I was thinking about this coming down the road today, and, you know, Franklin County has, there's so many stories here. There's so many wonderful people with wonderful stories that have done great things. And, you know, Nick here is no exception. And which made the show really, really easy. Cause all you got to do is go out there and ask. Cause there's so many. And a lot of the times, like in Carter's case, you know, Carter, welcome back, actually, Carter.
Thank you.
He's been on the show quite a few times, and we enjoy having him on for a lot of our sports related shows, you know, because he'll go, you know, remind us of people. Hey, what about this guy? What about this guy? And so it's almost a self-licking ice cream, I guess. But even more specifically than Franklin County is Callaway. And I say that because one, you know, Nick's from the Callaway area. Terrell Basham was on here. He was Callaway. Rick Reeves, you know, I'm pretty sure. I know Sean Greer is. I don't know. Is Jake and Ethan from Callaway as well?
Correct.
I believe so.
Yeah. Callaway both
men. Yeah. You got one half of the Knaff brothers that are successful. I'm trying to think. I mean, who am I missing? Colby Helms, you know, yeah. Caleb Floor, all these people. Just from the Callaway
area. We do have Josh Grice on the puppy dog corner, as I call it.
You did not allow me to get to the negative side of Callaway. Failed musician Joshua Grice. But he's actually, his address has always been Rocky Mount, and he's from Vero Beach, Florida. So Callaway gets a pass on that one. They can decide whether they want to accept him or not.
Oh, do I get a pass on that then?
Well, yes, most definitely, because you are part of a winning team here, and Josh brings everybody else down that he's around. Speaking of which, Crawford and Power are going to be playing here in Rocky Mount at the beginning of March, the first weekend in March. Yeah. It looks like tickets are going really, really fast. If you hadn't had a chance to jump on that yet, I know Carter said you got you a bunch of tickets already. We're looking, I think we've got ours, some VIP seats, so we're really looking forward to that.
And then we've got Colby Helms.
Colby Helms is going to be February 10th. And that's going to be the Five Points Music Sanctuary. It's going to be his. I mean, so Callaway, Frank County, we're doing great things. What did I forget? And all the people go back and, well, this is going to be the next show we release. So the following week, you're probably going to hear from Jason Nelson, Jason Storm Chaser Nelson, badass dude.
Oh, yeah.
Out in Texas, ran for Congress. There's some stories about, just Google him, and dude's pretty crazy. Like crazy smart, but, you know, we'll talk about that maybe on our
DC. That was a great show.
It really was.
That really was.
And after that, after our DC trip, we're going to have a ton of shows coming at you. We got some exciting stuff coming up for you here in the near future. But let's get to it. Did I forget anybody? I'm trying to name everybody off. I think you did a pretty good job there, Billy. Pretty good job to everybody. And that's one more time, patreon.com/getontap for our subscribers. You get shows like this early. Sometimes we do after shows. We have some cool stuff in DC for you. And for people like Josh Grice out there who haven't shared our GiftsandGo link, that's giftsandgo.com/getontap. I would have thought, you know, do you know how many people have come to me and asked me who plays that music that starts and ends a lot of our shows since I've started this show?
Countless, I'd imagine.
One, but that's still one more than would ever ask in the first place. So I'm not, more people have listened to Josh Grice's music because of me than anything. So I would hope he would be sharing the love and sharing this and maybe donate a few dollars to our calls, because I'm, you know, that's one of those kind of deals. But let's jump right into it, because I'm excited about this show. This is one, I hope we can bring to you yearly for different reasons, but he's been one of our favorite guests over the year. Obviously, Nick Robertson, St. Louis Cardinals now. It's been a little different from the last time. So I appreciate you coming out and making some time for us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And we'll also be joined once again, as we said, by our good buddy Carter Chitwood, who's, I guess, is kind of our sports co-host that we bring in. So I guess you're a part of the team as much as anybody else is. So I certainly appreciate you and your wife for allowing you to come out here tonight.
Yes, thank you. Welcome back.
That works too. Okay, and I didn't get your first name, but it's Coach Shelton, and I always call people by their coach name, but if you want to go ahead and introduce your full
name.
Yeah,
Coach Shelton, Barry Shelton, Frank County High School.
And you are the head baseball coach. How long have you been the coach?
12 years, yeah.
Now you have when you get big shoes to fill, because, you know, Frank County baseball program has always been really good. But I like the fact that you've been there 13 years, because consistency really helps build and develop. And I haven't got a chance to keep up with the team as much as I like to. But I know Nick was going through there at a certain time, and Bryce Arrington, I think, was playing around that same time. I always wanted to elbow drop him, but that's because he used to do the same thing to me when he was like 5 years old, off the top of the couch, right into the midsection, and just thought it was funny. And but now he's so big, I wouldn't mess with him. So,
well, you've just got to be cunning and devious.
It has.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. So you, Carter was telling me, Coach Shelton, also have some baseball experience. How far up did you make it through the?
Just made it into Double A with the White Sox.
That's pretty cool.
Back in the early '90s, mid '90s.
So did you get to play with Jordan?
No, he was the year before me.
Oh.
The year before I got with the White Sox, he was in Birmingham, yeah.
So the year before he was with Birmingham, and I guess by the time you made it up there, he was already back winning NBA
titles.
Yeah,
he was gone, yeah. He was done with back where he belonged. Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So with you being there at least the year after, there had to have been some – I mean, what was the feeling like around there? What was the
– We reaped the benefits, obviously. Locker room – facilities, upgrades, equipment, everything was to his specifications. So we reaped the benefits of that. But no, it was cool to be a part of that aftermath of Jordan being a part of the facility as far as the resources that were at our disposal.
So for y'all to help me out with this one, because I know, you know, maybe Nick doesn't know as much as because he's a little bit younger, but when we were all living through that time period, you know, everybody was ragging on Jordan really hard. Well, he's only got like a .230 batting average or something like this, but you still got to be pretty daggone athletic to go out there and bat that in the double A, you know. And for somebody that was in his mid-30s at the time, I mean, he did pretty decent.
I think it's one of the greatest athletic achievements of all time to hit 220 in double A and you hadn't played since you were 12.
That's one of the greatest things.
Like to be able to hit, do what he did after not playing baseball. There are guys who play baseball their entire lives and can't do what he did in baseball.
That's a natural ability. You know, you can pick it. He's learned to ride the bike. He hasn't ridden it for 10 years. He gets back in, he's riding the same darn bike. Yeah. But that's a natural athletic ability. And there's very few professional sportsmen, I think, that have that capability, because that's a scary talent. I agree.
That's an attribute that leads you to Michael Jordan, to show you that he is the GOAT. Yes. That, yeah, he dominated basketball for years and went back and did it again, but he switched gears and went to baseball, and it was almost seamless, it looked like. I mean, for somebody that's never picked up a bat in, you know, since he was 12, like Barry said, to go out and do that, I guarantee unheard you, me and you and Billy couldn't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unheard of.
Well, have you, Nick, since you've played, have you ever seen Space Jam?
Yeah, I've seen the original one.
Okay, so do you remember the scene where the catcher's sitting there and he's telling Jordan what the pitches are? Do you think any of that happened, or did people like want to get him out? Did people want to help him, or was it a little mix of both?
I'd say there's maybe a little mix of both, but I'd say people probably wanted to get him out more than anything. I know if I was pitching against him, I'd say, oh, I'd want to strike Michael Jordan out. So,
yeah, that's always that once in a blue moon, that crazy conundrum comes up. It's like, do you want to be the pitcher that got the dude out, or do you want to be the pitcher that, you know, gave up the 500th home run or whatever the case? Because I mean, it's, you know, it's all about really perspective of, you know, like Bill Buckner, he lives in infamy, not because of anything great career, that one moment, you know what I mean? But you remembered. And I think that, you know, legacy is important, brother.
I'm sure people both ways on that. I mean, you look at Michael when he was at Birmingham, you know, people were awestruck and starstruck. So the pitchers and catchers both went both ways. I mean, you go back to Bull Durham when you had Crash Davis and Nuke LaLoose, you know, he was telling, when Nuke would shake him off, he was telling the hitters what pitch was coming. And he's like, man, it's like he knew what was coming. He's like, yeah, I told him, don't shake me off. Throw what I call. Let me call your game and let me help you. You know, I'm sure that happened with him too. I mean, people are starstruck.
But that's almost a dirty strategy in itself. And I kind of love that intimidation, because that's exactly what that is, right? It's an intimidation.
Well, that may not happen as much today in baseball, but when you go back to the days of the Bull Durham movie and back in the minor leagues back then, that stuff happened all the time. Those people were scrounging to get to the next level. And Crash Davis, I mean, it may have been a fictional character, but, you know, he was pissed that he ended up back at Durham. And he was like, man, you want me down here to just help this dude grow? But that's what they did. They brought the catchers and people back that could help people progress, whether it be a Nick Robertson or whoever in a day. They wanted them people to get to the next level. So they brought these people in to mentor them. And he did. He wasn't happy about it, but he's like, either you're going to listen to me, we're going to do it my way, or it's going to be no way.
Yeah. What's the relationship between the pitchers and catchers these days? I mean, is it still as dynamic as it was, or is it a little more is a little more nuanced? Because you think back, and sometimes pitchers could be a backup catcher, but Maddox always wanted that backup catcher because he knew he could work with. I mean, how is the dynamic these days compared to what it used to be? Is it still the same, or?
I'd say it's probably a little different, just for the fact that, like, I think they spend so much time together that they're, like, pretty much always on the same page. And, like, if you see a pitcher and a catcher that are out there that aren't on the same page, like, the catcher will call time, go out, discuss with the pitcher, and then kind of get right back on it. As far as like relievers, though, we kind of have to spend our time before the game or whenever the catcher's not hitting or doing everything else they got to do, talking to them. So that way, every series, we got a different game plan for each lineup.
Yeah, because I don't think, you know, until I've gotten a little bit older, I've never really, I don't want to say respected, but never understood just how important a catcher really is. Because a catcher can see the entire field. They're reading everything. They're, you know, they're guiding the pitcher. You know, they're kind of moving fielders sometimes. They're also getting in the head of the batters if they're good enough at doing something like that. Like, they never really, you know, occurred to me how important they were until I got a little bit older in life. But, I mean, I guess you guys, are speaking of catchers, are probably going to be reporting here in a couple weeks. When is that? Like the middle of February?
Yeah, report date for us is February 12th for pitchers and catchers.
So they bring you guys back a little bit early. What's the reason they always get you all in before the rest of the guys?
Normally the pitchers and catchers get there early just so the catchers can get acclimated to the pitchers again, and pitchers normally throw a couple bullpens before the position players get there, and we throw some live ABs to them.
So I bet y'all have a pretty good time just hanging out there with just y'all before the rest of the hooligans get there, and y'all kind of focus on a few things. And
yeah,
and it seems like it'd be kind of a cool time to really get there and do that. How long are you all there before the rest of the team shows up?
Just a week.
Okay.
So it's not too much time, but we get to spend a lot of it together and get on the same page.
And where are you going to be going to spring training this year? Is St. Louis in Florida or Arizona?
They're in Florida. They're in Jupiter.
Is any of y'all going to be making it down there this year, Carter?
I would love to, but I don't know that we'll make it this year. Maybe if he's still with Cardinals, we'll try to plan a trip down next year. But working on trying to go see him when his season starts, either in St. Louis or close by.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
Yeah, that spring training is on my bucket list. I want to do it when my son gets old enough to be able to really appreciate it and let him know, hey, you know, you get an opportunity to come down here and you see some of the best that are out there today, and you're seeing some of the young guys that are going to be the next best, and you can probably do it fairly inexpensively. And what else is going on at spring training for like a spectator? Like if you just go down there for a kid, what all do, other than the baseball, what else is going down there to draw the fans?
The hitters, the athletes.
I will say it's probably a lot more fun to watch hitters take BP and hit some home runs than to watch a pitcher throw a bullpen.
That's true.
As far as like non-baseball stuff, I've never been to Florida to experience a spring training, so I can't really speak much for that. But Arizona, I know there's a bunch of different places that around each facility that you can go to and see. So
yeah, I was going to say, it seems like it's become a very like family friendly kind of deal where they try and get a lot of people to show up. So have you ever been to one, Carter?
I have not. Well, I have. I actually, when I was working at Ferrum College years ago, I took Abe and the team down 2 years in a row. We went down to spring training in Fort Myers, and we got to go out and see a couple games and things. And for fans, I mean, it gives you a lot more access to players, whether it be the big leagues, the minor leagues, the people that are there. You have a lot more access to these people than you normally would at a professional ballpark, whether you're going to St. Louis or Atlanta, D.C. You know, you can try to get autographs before and after games, but if you don't know somebody such as Nick, or if you're not going there to see somebody specifically, sometimes it's hard to get in front of those people to get FaceTime with them, get an autograph, or even talk to them. But spring training affords you a lot more time to see people. And in Florida and Arizona, a lot of spring training camps are very centrally located. So even if you're going down to watch St. Louis, there's probably 10 or 11 other clubs that are within, you know, 10 or 12 miles of where they're practicing. So you can go and see a wide variety of talent and see people.
Well, that was my thing. I always thought that they were fairly close enough to where in one day you could go hit four or five different places.
And
sure there's places in the middle at nights where people are hanging out and doing baseball stuff and having a blast.
I got sent to Scottsdale probably 6 years ago in the middle of June, and I learned a lot about Scottsdale, Arizona, which is where Nick previously was out in that area with the other spring training. And that town, from January 1st through the end of April, that's their season. That's their summer season, because they have baseball spring training. They have the Barrett Jackson car auction. They have Super Bowls if they're in Arizona. But the people in Scottsdale make a living from January 1st to about April or May. And then from there, there's restaurants that are shut down in the middle of June. I was flabbergasted. There's nobody in town. It's
so
crazy.
It almost becomes like a seasonal.
It is.
Beach resort.
Yes.
Town.
I mean, but it's January to March.
That's sweet. I love the way that, and I'm only just grasping this, the way the baseball community wants to engage with the fans. You know, that is a very cool concept, and that's to be embraced. I love it.
I mean, if you grew up in baseball and you followed any shape or form, I mean, that's the greatest thing, is to, you know, somebody you know or somebody you've coached to make it to that level and have an opportunity to go watch them play. It's phenomenal. It's great.
Well, speaking of that and being a kid and loving that kind of stuff, Nick, I don't know. I think Josh Grice brought this up back in December, but I think Callaway, he said, won multiple championships in Little League in a row. Were you part of any of those Little League championships for Callaway?
Not that I remember.
I don't know because I know when Nick started playing and Jared started playing, Keith, who was just here, Nick's father, we coached them the first couple of years that they played together. And back then, I can't tell you that we won any championships or anything, but it was just all about getting the kids involved and teaching them the right way to play the game and, you know, trying to help them progress to the next level. And then it wasn't long after that, we took them into travel ball and tried to get them in front of people that would get than the next level, such as Nick has.
So when we're talking about spring training, Coach, I wanted to ask you, you went in a time period that is almost ancient by today's standards. And that's not a disrespect to you. True. That's just as far as there's no social media out there to be able to chase y'all down the road. And I'm sure y'all probably got in a little bit more trouble than the kids can get into these days. So how much different really was it? I mean, was it a little bit more wild, like we recall these 80s movies and early 90s movies, or was it still a little tame because it was professional?
Well, I think it was a little bit more Wild West-esque.
Wild West-esque.
Did y'all ever have any natural rainouts?
I think it was, we had some natural rain. I think
there's a story here.
How do you spell that?
There's a story here. What's a natural rainout?
I mean, if you've never watched Bull Durham, they go to a park and they don't want to play, so they go out and turn the sprinklers on and have a natural rainout. Or a man-made rainout, I guess you'd say.
That's happened.
You know.
No, I think you're right. It was more of cutthroat. Like, is this guy, like, it's either him or me. I think now we know with the analytics and the data that we have, like, you can kind of project more. But back then it was like, you got to play, like you got to perform. If you don't perform, you're going home. Now, you know, a guy shows good numbers and he might stick around a little bit longer. Back then it was more productivity.
Was back then more of a, what can you do for me now, than maybe a progressive period? Because they could bring somebody young in now and say, okay, we understand he's going to go out here. We understand he's going to get lit up because these are his issues, but we've invested X amount of dollars in him, so we're going to bring him along. Yeah. We're not so much worried. And plus, I guess the financials are a little bit different nowadays because, I mean, I don't know what minor leaguers made back then, but I'm sure today.
Yeah, I think I made the most I ever made was $950 a month in the minor leagues.
Wow.
And if you didn't perform, you're going home. So it was pretty cutthroat.
That's ruthless.
Yeah.
That is ruthless.
Well, even business.
Even today, in the lower levels, there's probably not much more money than that right now.
Not much more. It's
Nick can attest to that, but I mean, I think he talked to it on our last show.
They just switched it this past year. So before this past year, the average that an A-ball player would make was like $12,000 a year, which is just for six months.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
Wow.
And see, and one thing I don't guess people might like for baseball players, that's a lot of work. You know, because it's really difficult. Because I know a lot of minor league players here in Roanoke for all kinds of sports over the years, they would always have other part time jobs and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Much easier for a hockey player to do a part time job. Because baseball guys could be gone 12, 13 days in a row, something, you know, they're all over the place. It's more sporadic. So, I mean, it's got to be a whole lot more difficult to adjust and at least try and survive compared to other sports, I would assume.
Yeah, you're playing every day. Like, you can't have a part-time job. It's your job.
Yeah.
You either make it work or it doesn't work.
I mean, that's why, you know, you look at the guys in Salem that play there now. I mean, you know, they either have a sponsor family or families, or there's seven or eight of them living in the same apartment together because they can't afford it any other way, but they're doing it for the love of the game and they want to try to make it to the next level. And to make it to the next level is where they get their pay increases. So they've got to go out and perform every day to try to survive and make a living. And some of them are married and have kids.
Yeah. And at that point, you're only as good as your last game, and that's cutthroat.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really ruthless.
Yeah.
And that's not a good thing, I think, for the game. because I think consistency when it comes to performance should really be playing a bigger element rather than, well, he didn't perform the last two games, cut him, pull someone else in. I don't know whether that's good for the game.
Well, and I think what Barry was alluding to there is nowadays it's not as much like that as it was back in the maybe late 90s, early 2000s. Now with the analytics and everything they have, take Nick, for instance, as he was progressing through the minor leagues, they knew that he was – they seen the potential. They knew what he was good at, what he could do. You know, and him being a reliever, he may only throw every two or three days. You know, it may be 3 days before he throws again, but they know how he performed 6 days ago, and it there's a lot more that factors into it versus going out one day and just falling on your face and getting shelled. So, and a hitter going 0 for 10, you know, they could come out the next 2 weeks and go,
that puts
10 for 12.
That puts an enormous amount of pressure on the athlete. Mm-hmm. And again, that may not be a good thing for the game.
Well, I mean, you got to look at the physical aspect of it and the mental aspect of it. I mean, these kids nowadays, you know, you take Nick, for instance, I'll just keep referring to him as, you know, he's been playing this game since he was 4 or 5 years old. So he's been mentally prepared for this all his life and knowing he wanted to get to this level, whether it be baseball, football, basketball, wrestling. And they know day in and day out that they have to go out and perform. But they mentally prepare for it as much as they do physically. I'm sure he does as much mental preparation for the team that he's getting ready to face in the next series as he does physically, because he's got to study the hitters, you know, their nuances, what pitches they like it, what counts. You know, am I going to be able to throw my slider to this guy? Am I going to have to light him up with fastballs?
How much coaching influence and information do you get as in your position from the coaching staff, or have you got to dive deep into those statistics, or are they presented to you and go, right, this guy doesn't like receiving a fastball or whatever it may be? I mean, how much information do you physically, mentally have to prepare, or is it given to you on a plate where you can digest it and then take your game plan forward?
Yeah, so every series we get a scouting report for each hitter. And
there we go. That's what I want to know, because I don't know this.
On the scouting report, it'll have like different teams do it differently, but like the Red Sox would have miss percentage, chase percentage, and then CSW percentage, which is called strike plus whiff, so when they swing or miss. And those are three that I would look at. So if I'm ahead in the count, if I'm 0-2-1-2, I want to know what percentage of the time this hitter chases this pitch. So that way, if I get into an 0-2 count and I want to throw a changeup, well, I know I can throw it not in the strike zone because he'll chase it.
I mean, that mental acuity, that to me is, that blows my mind.
But you think about that, and he has that information readily available to him and handed to him, but he's got to remember that for 9 guys.
Yeah.
At least the starters that he's facing, and possibly 3 to 4
every week
pinch hitters that could come into the game and face him.
Which is why the catcher is so important now,
yes,
too.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I can see that relationship where you the catcher and the pitcher has to be basically attached at the hip.
Mm-hmm.
Because that I can see now from the layman's point of view.
And it's not only just all those different kind of batters. Now you have to account for every single situation. Well, is there a guy on third, or are there two runners on with no outs? You know, that's the beauty part about, I mean, baseball is it's chess.
And it is the game of baseball. Chess. I mean, it's there's no other game out there like it. You can
and imagine playing that game that Nick just described you without any information.
Oh, you're winging it. You can't wing it.
So that was 20 years ago.
Yeah, not far removed.
Not far away from trying to figure all this out on your own.
Yeah, back 20, yeah. 25 years ago, you had to be a good poker player. Yes, you had to read faces, right?
Yeah. Well, you think about it back to the days that Barry and I played in high school. We're pretty much the same age. He's a year or two older than I am, but and he played in Roanoke. But you look back to the days that we played, we didn't have computers and this instant age of information. No. It was written down in some scorebook that the coaches had, and they would flip back through it, and you'd hope you guessed right on what this guy wrote down, and it was correct. And I mean, it wasn't any of that information. I mean, Nick and him have it on computers. He probably can look at that on his phone when he's in a hotel or traveling. Back then, it was just it was the old method.
Today's game, there's nobody has to trust anybody.
Right.
Like, can you expand on that?
We can prove it.
Statistically.
We can prove it. You know, like even with my kids at the high school, at Frank County High School, like I can prove to them what they're doing based upon their analytics. Like, so it used to be like when Nick played for me, I hoped he trusted me.
That's coaching relationship, right?
Yeah. When I said something to him, he had to trust me because I couldn't prove it. Now I can prove it. I can prove it.
And that's been
analytically.
That's been one of the hardest things for me as a layman to the game of baseball has been hard to grasp, but I've seen it very much from the outset that the statistics control the game to such an immense degree. I mean, when you start dealing with numbers and statistics, baseball is the game where you incorporate all of that, and it's an art.
If you don't believe statistics rule the game of baseball, go watch the movie Moneyball.
Well, that's what I was getting ready to say. I mean, baseball was such a numbers thing even before these analytics come out, but I guess Moneyball really changed. Are they still applying those tactics today?
Certain teams are, yeah.
Somewhat.
Yeah, somewhat, yeah.
I mean, that'll never go away because that's how their success is measured. I mean, you're talking about baseball, a sport that you can fail as a hitter. It's not a pitcher. You can fail 7 out of 10 times and be a Hall of Famer. So you get 3 hits out of every 10 at bats. You hit 300, you can be a Hall of Famer. But so you're failing 70% of the time.
Yeah.
So the analytics is huge in this game.
But the analytics also is very good for the hitter because your statistics can then actually work against you from a pitcher's perspective.
Point. More so for a hitter.
And now the hitter is going, well, my statistics will predict that this pitcher is going to give me whatever ball it may be. Yeah. You know, and at that point, that information becomes very important for the hitter. So then it becomes, is blowing my mind right now.
Well, I mean, you look at the great hitters and the great pitchers of the game today, they study that. I mean, if Nick is getting ready to go and face the Dodgers, who he used to play for, and Freddie Freeman knows that he's maybe facing Nick, he's going to study Nick and understand what Nick throws. And, okay, if he's got me 1-2, he's going to throw his fastball low and away, high and tight, you know. So they're studying him as much as he's being studied as well.
Now, as a pitcher, let me figure this one out. So now we're coming into the nitty-gritty. When you've got a hitter and he's there and you think he's reading you, how do you change that up? Because that, to me, that's where the art comes
in. Don't have him give
in.
Away his secrets. He's giving
I mean, but as a simpleton, right? I've now figured out some of the strategy behind. So we're now looking at all the analytics, and the analytics are as important for the hitter as for the pitcher. And then you can, wow, this just blows my mind. I've actually finally got a grasp of baseball. This is an epiphany moment.
It's a chess match.
How do you combat that?
You can do one of two things. One, you can make the hitter uncomfortable, which is just make him, like, you see how they dig into the box when they get ready to hit, and just throw one a little inside and move his feet.
Yeah.
It's like,
how much of his feet position dictates when he's about to grip up and you're about to deliver? His foot position should be giving you an enormous tell.
It means everything.
Okay, man, I've picked it up. I do believe I've got it.
As a hitter.
I'll give a little bit of insight here. You're talking to a great pitcher, and you're talking to a great hitting coach and a great hitter back in the day.
If you move my feet, I'm uncomfortable. And now everything changes.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because now you've got a read.
Because you
got
to think about it. Because, like,
well, at that point, you've got the read. If you've got the read, you're going to win.
Yeah. He's probably going to win that battle if he gets my feet moving.
There we go. Bingo. Yeah. Finally. Yeah. I've got it.
Feet are real. I mean, there's some, even football, there's so many tails in football. If you're on a defensive line, you know, if you look at a guard's feet, if you look at their hands, if their knuckles are red, that means it's probably going to be a run play. If their knuckles are white, they're probably going to be pass blocking. I mean, just the simplest of things that you can find out there in sports will just make a world of difference. And honestly, I guess when you get to Nick's level, I mean, it's the difference in, going to the next level or being sent down or that next contract or not. I mean, something so simple and small goes a long way.
I mean, that's poker and watching the pupils. Pupils dilate or contract or whatever. Those reads are critical.
And that's the entire game of baseball.
And how long does that go on for? Can it go on
probably,
for average?
So if you look at a professional baseball game, that's going to happen, 240 times a game?
Pitches?
260 times a game?
Yeah, that's a phenomenal concentration.
So the concentration of pitcher versus hitter is – so, if you know, Nick's a relief pitcher, so he's going to throw 30, 40 pitches, right, in a typical game. Every pitch, they're calculating what they want to do, what just happened, what's getting ready to happen, what the situation is.
With a relief pitcher, you've got a limited time to improve your statistics in that environment.
Exactly.
So actually being a relief pitcher is way more stressful.
Yes.
Because you can't impact your statistics over a shorter spell than a longer spell.
And the other factor that gets missed with relief pitchers is that Nick's taken on a load that wasn't his fault.
Right.
Most of the time.
Right.
Now, sometimes he can start fresh. Sometimes you start an in and off
sometimes
fresh.
Sometimes it's fresh.
But,
that's right. Yes. But there are times when he's taken on a load that he didn't get himself into that position. So now he's got to fix it.
And he's also picking up somebody else's pressure.
Whether that's good or bad.
Yeah.
It can go both ways there. Yeah.
But I was about to say exactly that. That goes back on the hitter as well, because that gives an inconsistency to what is about to happen next. And that's cool.
Well, speaking of the game in which y'all's thoughts, especially since y'all played on the new rules, when we're talking about the clock for the pitchers and we're talking about extra innings, a man being on second, and the one that really got me was the National League adopting the DH. I mean, are you more of a baseball purist? You just kind of like the way it goes. What does it do for, because I guess it has been implemented in the majors, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think it was last year and we talked yet. So how did that work? I mean, how do you like that?
I'll let you start.
I'll say I enjoy the pitch clock. I've just always been somebody who likes to work fast when I'm on the mound, so it doesn't really bother me that much. The runner starting on second in extra innings, I'm not a fan of because I'm a relief pitcher.
Yeah.
So it's not as fun, but it's not too bad. It's just the same as if you're coming in for another pitcher and there's already a runner on second base, so that's how you got to treat it.
I think, it depends on how you look at the game of baseball. You know, of course, Nick is at a different level than I've ever been at. But if you're a purist of baseball, I think some of this stuff that they've done, like the runner on second, is almost, to me, comical, because it takes away from the game and the chess match of baseball. If you're going to beat me, beat me. Don't get an advantage and beat me. If I'm the pitcher and I'm going out and you hit a dinger and win a game off of me, you beat me, but you've got a guy standing behind me now that wasn't originally there. The rules put him there. I don't agree with that so much. Be interesting to see Barry's take on that and listen to him. But the pitch clock, I think that's okay. It's kind of sped the game up because they can get monotonous a little bit. It makes people think a little more, whether it be the hitter or the pitcher. There are pitchers that like to take a lot of time. There are pitchers that like to work fast. There's hitters that like to take a lot of time in the box, whether they're fixing their gloves, their bat, their stance. And that also, that's all a chess match trying to work against the pitcher or the other opposing team. So there's things I think that have helped it, but I think there's things that have also hurt the game.
I think by the sounds of it, and again, I'm a layman to this and this particular conversation, but when it comes to a time clock, you're applying pressure equally.
It can be.
To a degree. I can see how that.
Perhaps, but I think the rule was implemented because of pitchers, because some pitchers would take quite a bit of time. And the pitch clock rule, honestly, that one doesn't really. I don't think that's that big of a deal. I'm not a big fan of a guy starting on second base because you're almost guaranteed to manufacture a run to some degree. I mean, you bunt a guy over, you hit a fly ball. That's not a guarantee, obviously, but I mean, the strategy has just been laid right out for you. Whereas if you're going at it, it's like college football. Play overtime. Don't start the guys at the 25 exactly. And let them go back and forth all day long. But
is it not speeding the game up though? And when you're speeding up the game, you're appealing to the fan.
Well, that's the thing about it is you got to find that happy medium. The fan, it's like in hockey, you know, it used to just go into a tie. Now they go into a shootout. Why? Because it's a little bit more exciting. Does it make the game fair? No, I think it takes away from the purity of it. And a lot of times, you know, it gives more control of the outcome to anything other than talent. You know, sometimes it's more luck. You know, sometimes it's just, I don't know.
Like, there shouldn't be a clock.
Well, that's the thing.
There just shouldn't be a clock.
Everybody else likes the clock.
Everybody else does.
I like the clock.
So high school, that doesn't affect anything. It's not anything in high school, right? Is there a clock?
No.
Okay.
No. And I don't think there needs to be one.
I think when if there isn't a clock, I think you've got a little bit of psychology coming into the game more so than when there is a clock. And that may not be correct of me to say that because now I'm thinking about a clock applying pressure equally. But when you don't have a clock, you're actually allowing someone a psychological advantage. Now, that could be the hitter and it could be the pitcher.
Well, I think my issue with I say clock in quotes, meaning – why are we in such a hurry to get the game over?
Well, I think he said, attention span.
Why are we putting a guy on second base?
Advertising time. Okay.
Absurd.
Sorry, did I say advertising?
Why are we doing that? That's my point with the clock. Baseball is a game it's a chess game. There's no clock. I'm okay with the pitch clock. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, out of all the changes they've made, okay, that's the one that I can deal with.
I'm okay with that.
I don't like the guy on second.
As a hitter who I want to get on with it, let's go. I'm okay with that. But when we get to extra innings, let the game play. Let it play.
And my least favorite is the DH in the National League. I like the fact that they changed it up. I like the fact that you'd have to watch, you know, the Red Sox change up their deal when they went to Atlanta, or Atlanta had to change up their deal when they went to.
You have to manage now.
Yeah.
Managers have to manage.
No, hold on. I thought it was the other way around. I thought the National League guys were the managers.
No. Without the DH, you don't have to manage anymore.
Okay, help us out because we always thought DH was a cop out.
It is.
Okay, I'm confused. No,
I think that's what he's saying is before when the NL had the pitcher hitting, you had to manage.
You had to manage the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you don't have to.
Okay, that's what I was getting at. I was it was so much.
We agree. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We agree. The same. I liked it when, you know, the World Series meant, it was a huge difference because every game would have to be managed differently, you know, depending on where you were at, who was up. And I don't know. Now when you just throw in that extra, I don't know. It dumbs it down a little bit for me. And maybe I'm a purist. I guess
but
I
at
am,
the but. Same time, I'm a purist. I'm a traditionalist. But at the same time, I apologize, Nick. Pitchers can't hit.
Yeah, you don't.
Nobody wants to watch pitchers.
Hold on.
You don't want to say
nobody wants to watch pitchers hit.
Oh, he's an exception to the rule.
Nick is an exception to the rule. Yeah.
That makes you an asset, by the way, Nick.
Yeah.
So how many times did you get a chance to hit this past season?
None.
Not one.
I don't want to hit.
I don't want to hit. He don't want to hit.
Yeah, but if you could, make it count, right?
If I could, he would.
I can attest to that.
I'd probably take three pitches and go back to the dugout. But I go down swinging.
That's the way to do it.
For you all, I mean, how much time do you actually spend as relief pitchers? How much time do they actually spend on batting practice? Is it?
Before the rule changed, it was my first year. So we would spend time practicing bunting. And then if the pitchers threw a shutout, we got to take BP. Other than that, I don't know. Because in the minor leagues, AA and AAA, the pitchers would hit then. So I don't know whether they did the more. I was in rookie ball, so that's the only time that we would do it.
Yeah, I guess we've kind of lost bunting. I don't think really think they don't really bunt and steal as much as they used to. I mean, that whole aspect of the game looks like it's kind of – I don't really know what the new strategies are, but it just –
They kind of picked it back up more this year with the pitch clock, and they also increased the size of the bases.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
That changed it.
Bunting not as much, but stealing bases has become a lot bigger part in the game.
Well, good, because that's one thing I've missed over the years. I mean, it's like we had Ricky Henderson growing up, and just nobody since has been anywhere even remote. I guess who's been the greatest since him?
Oh, I can't think.
I mean, Dion for a short time, but I don't even think he was that.
Acuna this year is the closest anybody's come to a Ricky Henderson season.
Yeah.
How many did he end up having?
70
or something. In between 70 and 80.
It was 70 something.
No, it is.
That's, I mean, but that, dude's a rare deal, too.
Yeah, Ricky would have that all-star.
Oh, yeah, he'd have that all-star. I mean, you're talking a different time frame, too. I mean, it's just different ball.
It's percentage.
Well, help us out here because, all right, Ricky Henderson was extremely fast. We know there are extremely fast people out here on this planet, like Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
Is there any chance anybody out there could be brought on just for that sole purpose, or is the catchers caught up to the game so much it's just that hard to steal? Because you think you'd be able to bring in somebody just with magnificent speed just and do nothing but steal.
Well, as a coach, no. Because it's so much of it is reading pitchers and moves and timing and the distance of your lead.
Well, that person is not going to have so many instances in a nine-inning game to be on base and steal. And whether you use them as a pinch runner or they're in the lineup, they've got to get on base. And whether they manufacture a walk or they get a hit or however they get there. But if you're a pinch runner, I mean, you're only going to get one instance in a game to be able to steal a couple bases.
But that could be a very important instance. Though,
it could. But
the thing about that, it also gets you is, I guess if you are that guy, if you are that specialist, they know exactly what you're doing.
But they have those guys. I mean, there's guys that are in the line, that are on the roster that pinch hit and run. That's what they're there for.
Yeah. The stolen base is one of the most exciting things in baseball to me, because there's so many things that can go on at once. He's got the hitter's going to take a swing regardless, just to get in that catcher's head. The catcher's got to step up, make the throw, and if he misses, that guy's going to third, and it's just chaos everywhere. And it can really change the outlook of a game, you know, because baseball's such a momentum sport as well. You could be down by two or three runs. That first guy gets on base, crowd gets a little into it. All of a sudden, you got two on, and that crowd just—it's miraculous. I mean, I love the intensity of it.
Well, I think you said that the chaos is what we're trying to. The stolen base is trying to create chaos,
organized chaos.
You're trying to put the defense in an uncomfortable situation.
But then there's a counter to that. I saw something. I can't remember where there was a number of clips, and it was very devious where the guy was safe. And then he took his hand off the base for a nanosecond, not aware that the guy on base had the ball and he got tagged. And there was an element of deviousness behind it. I mean, there is some smoke and mirrors when it comes to that. And that to me, I saw that it was this week as well. It was funny that we're having this show now and I happen to have seen that. But I thought, that's bloody cheating.
You know, do you have runners in cricket? I know you went over us on the last show.
No runners, no gloves.
Yeah, no runners, no gloves. Only the wicket keeper.
But those people
has the
will
gloves.
Fill up an entire stadium, and that game will go on for days. I know we talked about this last.
No time. Understanding of that game.
Like, if you want to talk about stolen bases, I'll put this to rest. The bigger issue is, how does it affect the pitcher? It's not about like stealing a base. It's about, so if we're trying to steal a base, what we're really trying to do is get our hitter a better pitch to hit.
There you go. That's how to see it.
Right? Okay. We're trying to get Nick in an uncomfortable situation on the mound.
Put the pressure on him.
Yeah. So now the pitcher has to alter something, and that's going to give the benefit to the hitter.
Yeah. The strategy behind this game. It has
nothing to do with the runner.
That goes all back to the chess game.
Yeah. Isn't it? I mean, right? It is such a game of strategy.
Right. Like if Nick's under pressure from the runner, it's going to cause problems with the hitter.
Absolutely.
Not the runner.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that just blows my mind there. I'm finally grasping this strange game of baseball. I'm kind of loving it, you know?
We need to get you out to a game this year.
Yeah, for sure.
And we probably should get something going up there to see Nick. And I want to kind of talk about you a little bit because it's been a year since we had you on here, and what a topsy-turvy year it's been for you, first off, and I think most importantly, congratulations on becoming a husband. I think you got married not too awful long ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, let's go.
So, I think that's the biggest thing, possibly to happen to you in the past year.
Yeah.
You've added another manager to your life. So I hope all that's working out well for you. But you made it. You know, before you'd come on here last year, you hadn't quite made it. We all said we knew it was going to happen.
And it did then, didn't it? Next week it did.
No, not the next week. It was a few months down the road.
Was it really? I thought it was quicker than that.
So walk us through that. How did you find out? What did you do when you found out? Did you call anybody? Did you jump up and down? What was it like for you to get that call?
So I was just, we were sitting at home and my AAA manager called me and was basically just like, hey, don't come in to the field tomorrow. Just go ahead and pack all your stuff. Like you're going to get on a flight to Los Angeles in the morning. So, as soon as I got that phone call, I just called all my family, called my wife first, tell her, and I think she was the happiest person for me, which was awesome to see. But after I got done calling all my family, I called Coach Shelton, all my college coaches, and just anybody who had really helped me get there. But then, I got on a plane to Cincinnati, got to Cincinnati, and then just being able to see everybody that I knew at the ballpark that first day there just made it all really exciting.
Yeah, we had that video of it. You know, they panned in on you, and I guess the guy you were facing was somebody you faced in the minors quite a bit too, wasn't it? Or am I thinking of something else? Maybe I'm
No, I hadn't faced. Are you talking about De La Cruz?
Maybe that's what we're talking about, because we maybe had this conversation the last time we were on the show.
I didn't face him at all in the minor leagues. That was the first time that I had faced him.
Well, we were stoked that you got him, though.
Yeah, I mean, then they panned in on
the field. Yeah.
Dude, that was a night.
I mean, smoked him.
There was a lot of us there that night. I mean, all his family was there, his mom, his dad, his mother and father-in-law, his wife, his sister-in-law, his sister. Man, it was a great night to be at that ballpark.
Oh, yeah.
So what was it like for you that very first time walking onto the field? Just
I'm interested to hear this.
Well, if anybody that was there watched my bullpen before I went into the game, they probably would have told the manager to not put me in the game because I couldn't feel anything. Every pitch was going all over the place. And eventually on the last one, like the bullpen coach just looked at me and was like, you're here for a reason. Like you can do this. So I walk out of the gate. It's out there in right field, tucked in the corner. So you can't really see anything. And then you get out there and like all the lights are on. And like, I just tried not to like look up, as silly as it may sound, but I just like was focused on the mound and getting out there. And then when I got out there, I tried to like block off my view behind the plate to like five rows up and just look at the catcher. But the whole time I was out there on the mound, I couldn't feel anything. Like I couldn't even feel my cleat in the dirt. And I was just trying to throw strikes.
The emotions, the feeling. I mean, because you're trying to go out there and do a job that they're paying you a lot of money to do.
Yeah.
And you're trying to put somebody down who's getting paid a lot of money to make you look bad. But at the same time, everything you've ever worked for, all your dreams as a kid are coming through at that very moment. And you really can't express it how you want to because you're there to be professional and do a job.
And they trust you to be there. I mean, they brought you there for that reason.
That's right. I think the best part too is I got done with the first inning and I was like, huh, that wasn't too bad. I'm, you know, I got through that. I'm done. And then
that's easy.
Then Doc looks at me and is like, all right, keep going. And you get another one. Boy. All right.
You get another one.
I got to refocus and go back out there.
Yeah, if you didn't get a chance to share, we'll try and share it again this week before the show comes up. But we did share the first strikeout a couple of times.
Oh, we did several times.
We had last year. We were super proud of it and glad to see you made it. So you make it out there with the Dodgers and you know, the team that drafted you, they called you up, they give you your first opportunity, and then somewhere down the line, they ship you off to Boston. So what was that, you know, that whole kind of thing like? Was it, you know, was it kind of a little bit of disappointment because you weren't there anymore, or you just look at, hey, is this another opportunity and another chance to show my stuff?
Yeah, so it was kind of funny, like, being with the Dodgers, anytime, like, the trade deadline comes around, everybody starts, like, panicking, wonder if they're going to get traded or whatever, and I didn't really think anything of it, but I was laying there and on the training table and I saw that we were trading for Kike. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I wonder who's going. And then about 5 minutes later, I got a message from our GM. It was like, hey, call me when you get this. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. I guess it'll be me. But yeah, at first, I think the first reaction is just a little bit of sadness just because I've been with the people that I've been playing with for so long and made good friendships with them. But you just kind of got to treat it as another opportunity that I was excited for. I mean, the three organizations that I've been with so far, like, are pretty historic. So, like, there's no complaining about that. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, man, to go from the Dodgers to the Red Sox and now getting to start fresh with the Cardinals. Yeah. I mean,
so I'm going to ask this. I mean, how was it pitching in Dodger Stadium, Fenway? What's the difference? How's that? Can you equate to them?
I can't really compare them. Just because even though Dodger Stadium is older, it's still, like, really,
I mean, they're
new,
both iconic.
Like, yeah, like, Dodger Stadium was the first stadium built out west. But just, like, all the upgrades that they've done to it, it kind of feels, like, newer.
Newer.
But then, like, you go to Fenway and it's, like, everything there is still the same. Like, when I was getting ready to walk into the home clubhouse, I thought I was going to walk into, like, this little tiny room, but mm-hmm. they've updated everything on the inside, which is super nice for all the team. But then, like, you know, you walk down through the tunnel to go out into the dugout and it's like, I gotta walk with my head to the side like this or else I'm gonna hit my head on it. And then
teams are all midgets.
Yeah.
And then out there in the bullpen, they still have, like, the same bullpens that they've always had, and you can tell because there's 20 layers of paint that they just continuously paint
over it.
That's an almighty legacy, by the way, when you think of those three teams.
Yeah.
I give credit to you. That is almighty right there.
I mean, you think about the people that played for the Dodgers and the Red Sox. I mean,
the greatest of all time.
Babe Ruth with the Dodgers. I mean, with the Red Sox. Oh, I mean, you know.
That was a slip right there that you can't make. I mean, you're going to – I mean, I guess it's a little bit easier nowadays. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and even just in recent years, you know, the Red Sox and the Dodgers combined have won a handful of series mm-hmm. since 2000. And now the Cardinals, I mean, they just seem to find a way to be successful. They're like the Green Bay Packers or the Pittsburgh Steelers of Major League Baseball. No matter what the expectations are, you look down at the end of the season and the Cardinals are always in the mix and somehow find a way. So how did that, I guess they traded you again from the Red Sox to the Cardinals in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had a lot of time to get acquainted with a lot of your teammates there, coaches, anything to that degree or anything like that?
A little bit. I've called and talked to a couple coaches, and then I knew a couple players before they got to the Cardinals. And then I met with my pitching coach last week. He came to watch me throw in Knoxville. But I went out for the Cardinals winter warm-up and caravan, which is just a fan fest. And it was just super exciting to see, like, how excited people are for baseball, like, in that area of the country.
Well, I got to say, you know, just as a perspective from somebody who's just rooting for you to do good regardless, I'm not a huge Red Sox fan.
I got tore up with Johnny Damon once. Well,
we know.
Know everybody.
Like, yeah. It's scary, isn't it?
Well, when you're getting paid by the government in the deep state to go around and get information on everybody, that's kind of how it works.
That was an amazing experience. He came out with his family, and we had a riot with Johnny Damon. That was pretty cool.
Wow.
Is that before or after the long hair?
It was just at the crux of him moving from the Red Sox
to the Yankees. Because the Yankees won't allow that kind of hair, will they? I mean, right? They don't allow.
No, he had long hair then.
Yeah, I guess every club's probably different in their grooming.
Well, I think the Yankees are it. The Yankees are it. Anybody else?
That's it. Like, nobody else has anything, right?
No,
I'm sure it differs from team to team, but like the one that stands out the most is the Yankees.
And that was a huge, like, I remember because when I came home from Iraq, it was in 2004 when the Red Sox had that amazing series with the Yankees. They were down 3-0, and I was a big fan of Nomar Garciaparra, so I was hardcore on the Red Sox back then. And then the next year, everybody and our freaking cousin was a Red Sox fan, so I kind of just
Johnny Damon was the one that broke the curse.
He was part of it. Dave Roberts was the grand slam.
Johnny Damon got the grand slam. I mean, that was a key moment for the Red Sox.
What's that? Said most Dave famous Roberts. Stolen base ever.
Most Dave famous Roberts. Stolen right. base ever.
That's right. I mean, I remember with C.J. Arrington, you know, Bryce's brother. I think you played with him. We were down at his brother's house watching that, and then they got to game four, and we were just so distraught. I was like, no more Yankees. We're tired of this. And every night we'd go back and just watch it over and over. Next thing you know, it gets to game seven. And honestly, that might have been the greatest series in the history of a game. World Series is combined. And then actually, you know, Boston goes on to the next round, and the World Series was they just walked the dog 4-0 over the Cardinals here. So, I mean, that ALCS was the series of the year that year. And I don't think St. Louis had a shot, poor guys, because all that momentum coming from beating the Yankees in that fashion. It was that was the last series I can remember watching. And I'm a Braves fan, and they just won the series. But that Yankees-Red Sox in 04, to this day, I can't think of anything more intense and more fun to watch.
To meet Johnny Damon on the cusp of all of that was just an absolute delight.
Was he a pretty cool guy?
As a cucumber. That guy was just a very humble guy, you know. An amazing character, family orientated. He came out to Turks and Caicos with his family. And when, you know, we had a super time with him, he lands on his private jet, of course. But he was very humble. And I remember that distinctly from having broken the curse. I thought there is a humble dude right there. And it was on his shoulders that happened.
So who gets a statue in Boston for that? Honestly, who gets it?
David Ortiz.
You think so?
Yeah.
Not Franco.
I don't know. Who gets the statue in Boston?
For which
Big Poppy.
For breaking the curse. Because you can only have one. Who gets the biggest introduction?
Kurt Schilling, Bloody Sabbath.
Kurt Schilling.
Big
pitcher. He gives the pitcher. Nah. Yeah. He gives the pitcher.
If I was going to give a pitcher, I'd give it to Pedro.
It's got to be Pedro, but right?
If you're going to, I don't know, I'd say they probably build a statue of Big Poppy.
Yeah, you got to build.
I mean, there's a lot of names there, but
he walked it off.
I mean, even the catcher at the time was
Verite.
Yeah, he was the leader. He was the leader. But
well, most of the time the catchers are.
But Veritek was a coach in Boston when I was there.
Yes, that's true. Veritek was one of the coaches.
Was he pretty intense as a coach, or was he kind of more laid back?
Oh, no, he was great.
Really?
Yeah, he would. They would do meetings with both of the catchers that we had. And like the game planning coach, they do it with the pitchers post outing, like the next day, and just kind of go over like what you did, what you want to improve on for next time, and like how you felt about their game calling.
He might have been one of my favorite players of that
ever
period. Yeah, I mean he was just a natural born.
He's a student of the game.
Yeah.
And didn't he have like a crazy story or something, like how he got there, or wasn't he kind of left for dead, made a comeback or something? Am I thinking about Euculus from that year?
Euculus.
The Greek god of
walks. That was Euculus.
Okay.
Yeah, that was Euculus.
So what was was Fenway the favorite place you played? What was the coolest stadium you got to pitch in this past year in your mind?
Historically,
it's
Fenway.
It's got to be Cincinnati, right?
You would think. I think my favorite place, my favorite atmosphere with the fans and everything was probably Toronto
Really?
Oh, wow.
Really? Yeah.
Canada.
Really?
Just because, like, when you go in there, the fans are right on top of the field. They're slam packed. And I don't know. They were just into the game for the whole game.
Oh, it's interesting.
That's not the way I would have went. I mean, like, yeah, Joe Porter in the early cool.
I would have thought Toronto, but.
Where are you really looking forward to playing at that you haven't played at quite yet? Anywhere in specific that you just.
I'd say first would probably be Busch Stadium.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
yeah.
Other than that, I don't know. I like to play in Wrigley. I think that would be another cool one.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be a blast. And like I said, selfishly, as somebody was rooting for you last year when you did get the trade to the Red Sox, my first thought was, well, hell yeah, next year that means he's going to be coming to Baltimore at least 12, 13 times or whatever it is. It's going to give us a great opportunity to go up there and find it. So now it's going to be a little bit more difficult.
That's okay. He'll be in Washington.
Well, yeah, you got one, but not quite as much because they're not in the division. But, yeah. You know, Washington and Atlanta, I think this year we might need to make a trip to one of the two.
Seattle's not far away.
For who?
Yeah, back and back. That's a relative, right? Look,
we don't have Simon's MI6 money quite yet.
Hey, so I'm going to tell you, that trip to Cincinnati that night was a bear, but I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I would do it
in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat.
The ride home was brutal.
Brutal. But
for did y'all not even stay the night?
No.
Oh, dear Lord.
I had to work the next day. Wow. But for an opportunity to see a kid that you've watched grow up since literally 4 or 5 years old playing this game and have his first major league game, whether he got in or not that night, it didn't matter. We were going, and it was phenomenal to be there.
Yeah.
That's commitment right there. Love it. It was.
Wouldn't have missed it for the world.
That was a great experience.
Yeah, no, y'all got to be on great. TV because we definitely found you on there at night.
Oh, yeah.
We were so happy, you know, so proud. We shared it everywhere. You know, the cool thing is, too, is I was telling your dad here a little bit earlier, I said it's such a small world because I was trying to piece together the Robertsons because my mom was a Robertson. And I know there's 4 or 5 different families. And then it was like, wait a minute, that's Dwayne's nephew. And actually, Norma Jean cut my hair when I was a kid.
She cut my hair when I was a kid, too. Yes, I mean,
my dad and I guess your uncle Dwayne were really good friends over the years. Actually, Dwayne helped build our cabin down there, which we're going to try and do some shows at here pretty soon. I've actually got old VHS of him and Lisa. Is that his wife?
Linda.
Linda. I knew it was in there. I'm sorry, Linda. I'm sorry, it's been years. But I actually have video of them from the late 80s building the cabin down there. It's wild to watch. And then, you know, when I pieced all that together, I was like, I have such fond memories of going up there on 6 Mile Post, turning up in there, going to that basement. And you go in there, and my dad would take us. He would get his hair cut. Norma Jean just be talking the entire time. And it had that salon smell to it. You know what I mean? Like, it just, you'd go in there and it had that smell, and there'd always be a woman over there with the big hair dryer and reading her book, and she would always chime in every couple minutes. So I'm glad I put the pieces together to kind of figure out that's the Robertson side you come from, because I love Norma Jean.
I was blown away this evening. I come walking up here in the barrel room and I see Keith. And he goes, oh, yeah, how you doing, Simon? Hey, Keith, hang about, what's going on here? I had no idea he was your old man.
No idea.
Just like, holy crap. Now the pieces of the jigsaw come together.
It's a small world.
I'm just laughing my arse off.
It really is. It's a super small world. Well, I know one thing I want to talk about before we get off here, because I know everybody's busy and they got things to do. Nick, you got to see family. You're getting ready to go back out. Billy Wagner, let's talk about him real quick, because we just missed it.
Five votes.
Just missed it. Mm. I mean, what are y'all thoughts on that? Why?
Who wants to start?
I think I'm a firm believer that if these guys are going to vote and they have a vote, they ought to all be public. And we need to know why and transparency, where these guys are voting and why they're voting. You know, next year is his 10th and basically final year. I don't see how he's not going to make it in next year, but, you know, I didn't think Joe Mauer would get in over him this year. First time on the ballot and get in over him. But, you know, stranger things will happen, but hopefully he makes it next year. He deserves it. I mean, there's no left-handed reliever out there that was any better than him, in my opinion.
Reliever, period.
Reliever, period. I mean, Rivera, but I mean, you're talking two different worlds.
Two different worlds. You're exactly right. Like,
and just the story that he comes from to where he ended up, I mean, it's unheard of.
Yeah, his story, I mean, just, but people, I encourage you to go look at that and look at how he grew up. But, I mean, what are your thoughts on it, Coach?
But
I mean, is there any reason why he should not be in the Major League?
No.
The Baseball Hall of Fame?
No. Zero.
Absolutely
reasons.
None.
Zero reasons. Forget about the fact that he's the greatest left-hander reliever of all time.
As a natural righty, by the way.
A natural righty.
Couldn't write his name left-handed if he had to.
What he did, I always think Hall of Fame is based upon what you did while you were playing in your era. And he was the greatest. He was just the greatest. Like, the game was over. You look at... That's my thing. Like, and Nick knows this. Like, if you have a good closer, you shorten the game. So you don't have to play eight innings. Everybody else is playing nine. You're playing eight.
And he was one of the few.
And he was one of the few where you would say, we only got to play eight innings.
Because if we get the ball to him.
If we had the lead going into the ninth, the game's over. It's over.
What about you, Nick? What are your thoughts on it as a ball player and as somebody who's probably followed Billy quite a bit? I mean,
yeah, I will say that when I was younger, Carter took me to watch Billy pitch a couple times, and I actually went to a camp for him out in Tazewell.
Really?
You really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Me, Jared, and Tanner, right? Yeah.
Really?
For a camp out there.
It was cold as a blue blazer.
Oh, it was not fun. But just like everything you see about him, like, I think the biggest thing for me is like the people who voted for him last year that didn't vote for him this year.
Yeah, that bothers me.
Like, what are they looking at? I mean, what kind of body of work are they? I mean, how do you look at a guy and say, okay, he was, you know, under 6 foot tall, he was throwing left-handed as a natural righty, and ended up having the greatest statistics of all time?
Like, he broke his arm twice. And he decided he wanted to continue to play baseball, so he taught himself how to throw left-handed so he could continue to play baseball.
At that level.
No, he was only in, like, what, high school or middle school at this point in time.
Yeah, but even so.
To this day, he could not feed himself or write his name left-handed if he had to.
Now, I'm fairly ambidextrous.
True.
But
true story. True story. He will tell you that.
To go from a strong arm to a weak arm and then make that legacy. Give the man credit where it's due.
This story, Abe may have a different version of it, but I know a little bit about Ferrum baseball. My cousin was an assistant for Abe for many years. I remember the first practice I saw Billy practice at Ferrum College. It was in the fall of his freshman year. He was a center fielder. He was taking fungos in center field. I was up there after school working out with the team. And he caught a ball somewhere in center field vicinity, and the play was supposed to go to home plate. He threw the ball. It hit three quarters of the way up the backstop behind home plate. Abe said, son, come here. We need to try you somewhere else. And they realized he could pitch.
Really?
And, I mean, he pitched in high school, I guess, some. But at that point in time, Abe realized that he had a talent. And I mean, it hit three quarters of the way up the backstop. And on the fly from center field. The kid was phenomenal. So, I mean, I've watched him hit 101, 102, 103 on a gun in college. This is before he ever got to the major leagues. I watched a kid from Methodist or North Carolina Wesleyan. They got beat 1-0 at Ferrum. The kid hit a home run off of him. I swear it grazed the right field foul pole as it went out. The pitch was like 101 mile an hour. The kid hit it out of right field, and Ferrum got beat 1-0 that game. But, I mean, it was unbelievable what he could do on the mound.
So, essentially, Coach Neff brought him there just to be a ball player and was the one who realized
he probably came to play football.
Oh.
And he ended up being a baseball player.
He was a football guy.
If his story goes correct, it was either Dave Davis or Hank. I don't know which one was the coach at that point in time.
Dave Davis.
Said, son, you need to go to the field next door. Yeah. You need to get off my football field. You need to be over there.
So, how did he figure that out on the football field? Was he a quarterback?
Yeah,
I thought it was a wide receiver.
Yeah, he quarterback in high school,
but he was an athlete.
Yeah,
but
Natural athlete, says it all.
Unbelievable.
So the football coach actually looks at him and
yeah, you belong on that field over there.
That's amazing. Like, I didn't realize.
And once they seen his ability over there,
that takes some balls for the coach to go, you need to be on,
oh, yeah,
on playing, yeah, that game.
I mean, you don't find many stories that are written, no, any better than that. If it doesn't become a movie at one point in time down the road, you're not going to find it. I mean, Nick, he's been a natural pitcher from the get-go. I mean, as he progressed and his height grew, I mean, he was a pitcher. He could hit in high school and in the younger years. But
to do that transfer?
He's a pitcher.
That's phenomenal. Yeah, right. That's his athletic ability.
Nick, can you throw left-handed?
No. Not even a tennis ball.
He can hit, yeah, a little.
Really?
He can hit a little bit. He can hit a little bit. Hey, in Nick, high school. Hey, Nick's senior year, he played shortstop.
Really?
Absolutely.
That's what a was great story.
Was he still the same height as he is now?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, I moved him to shortstop, and he laughed at me. True story. Wow. He laughed. He started
explain
laughing.
Explain his story. Well, I mean, I would almost have to as well with his size, putting him at shortstop. But you're the coach, so
we had nobody that could catch a ground ball at shortstop, and I said, Nick, go to short, and he kind of acted like he didn't know who I was talking to, and I said, go to shortstop.
You're the only Nick.
And I pointed at him, and he went, and he laughed, and I said, you're the shortstop. That was it. Well, I mean, and he played shortstop. It's 6'6".
I mean, you look at...
And what were you senior year? 230?
230.
6'6", 230-pound shortstop.
I mean, most shortstops are very athletic
people. He could catch a ground ball. And I think that... Did it help you think, at all?
I'd say it definitely helped me stay athletic.
Yeah.
But that's how eye-hand coordination. You've either got it or you haven't, right? Well, you can't teach that shit.
A lot of times,
it's hard.
Whether it's in high school or pros, the shortstop's one of the most athletic people on the team.
Yeah,
I mean, they've
got look at colleges now. A lot of colleges, and Nick, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of colleges now recruit a lot of shortstops, and then they move them. I'm going to move a shortstop in second.
Funny that.
Right?
So they're essentially the guys that can be maneuvered.
They're the best players on the field. Normally, they're the best players on the field.
I guess that's why Cal Ripken gets so much accolades.
I mean, you look at another player that come out of Ferrum, Eric Owens. I mean, he was a football player.
Athletic,
but he was 6'2", 6'3", a shortstop at Division III college that could have played Division I any day of the week.
Yes.
I mean, I've seen him go in a hole and backhand balls and plant and throw a guy at first. It was a hose.
Could have played Division I for baseball?
Both.
Yeah, really? Both.
He could play football or baseball, Division I. I mean, he was an athlete.
What ended up getting him to Ferrum again? I know we talked about this last time, but I can't remember.
He was out of Tunstall, out of the Danville, Pennsylvania area. Not sure why he ended up at Ferrum, but he did. I mean, I don't know if he just won any radars, but again, an exceptional athlete. One of the fastest, I'm going to say this,
maybe politically
correct as I can, one of the fastest white men I've ever seen on this face of the earth.
We talked about this on the last show. One of my fondest memories of him is watching him for – I think the Padres stealing home one time.
Yes.
That was an ESPN highlight that stealing home is not, you know, it's not a common thing. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, wow.
He played in the manner of a kid from Southwest Virginia. Mm-hmm. Tough.
That earned it.
Dirty.
Bulls to the wall.
Blue collar. Yes.
And I know out of that time period, you know, obviously everybody knows Billy a little bit more because of the accolades, because he's ready for the Hall of Fame. But, you know, we tend to forget, you know, Eric, he had about an 8-year career in the majors. And that is, I mean,
well,
Eric's
greatest accomplishment may have happened after he quit playing when he became a hitting coach.
Yes.
And he finished as a hitting coach with Toronto, and he still lives up in that area. Eric could play exceptional with a glove, but he might have been a better hitter than anybody ever played at Ferrum. Wow. That kid could rake.
You're talking about you're talking about Riley Hodges and Pat Daly.
Oh yes. Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now he didn't have the home runs that Pat Daly had and things like that, but just, as far as average and pure hitter, Eric Owens might be the best player to ever step in a batter's box at Ferrum College.
Well, I know we've been trying really, really hard because I go back and forth with Eric sometimes on Messenger and stuff, and we're trying to
get him and Billy on at some point.
Here in town. Hopefully, maybe maybe if we can't schedule it this summer, maybe sometime next winter when Nick has a little bit more of an understanding about what's going on with him, we can have a big baseball.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Have them three
on the bring on Nick.
Them
bring
three on together?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, before we get off here real quick, I know everybody's got to get out of here. We'd be remiss without mentioning that when you talk about Major League Baseball and big influences around here, we did lose Ron Hodges not too awful long ago. And
what a great loss to the community.
And, you know, I'm such good friends with Nat and Casey as well. And I've some of my best baseball memories was, you know, traveling to St. Louis, or not St. Louis, it was Sauget, Illinois, just outside of St. Louis, when Casey and them won the Division II national title for Mount Olive.
Yeah.
That was back in 09, I think. We drove all the way out there. It's back when that one little time period where gas prices were $4.50 a gallon. We were broke college kids. We had just enough money to drive there. Out there to watch the game, eat, get a hotel. We was like, what can we do free? That is a touristy. So we went to the Arch, didn't get to go up the top of it because we didn't have money. And we got to go to the Anheuser-Busch factory, drove by Busch Stadium. I said, one day I want to go there and watch a game. I would love.
Now we need to go.
Now I have a reason now to go back there and see a game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so the Hodges family, you know, big shout out to them. I know that was a devastating blow to the entire community. And
Ron was a great member to the Society of Franklin County, the community, the baseball community of Franklin County. There's not many kids, maybe not Nick's age as much, but mine and younger, that some point in time did not have some kind of run in with Ron and some kind of communication. I mean, just a phenomenal family.
And I will say Ron was one of the biggest reasons I ever started this show, because he was one of the people I knew. We had so many great stories from this area. And I thought to myself, I want to get him on here one time. He played with Willie Mays. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He got to play with Daryl Strawberry, Doc Gooden. He knew all these guys. And Ron was just so conservative and tight-lipped. And it was, even though I was close friends with his boys, I've known him my entire life, just getting him on here.
He never wanted to talk about himself.
Yeah, he didn't. And that's a testament to him and the type of person he was.
Humble.
Very much so. But we've had Nat on here before. And honestly, my next is Peggy, because I don't think one woman has watched as much baseball.
She's probably watched more baseball games per capita than anybody in the United States.
True.
So we're really hoping to get Peggy to come jump on the show at some point in time. So mad shout out to them.
All right, I know Nick needs to get out of here. I know there's got to be one story that him or Barry want to tell on each other or both that we can get out of here and put on this podcast, because there's got to be something out there that these two want to tell on each other.
Well, I think you already have something in mind here, so as soon as he gets back over here, we'll let him know. But, you know, once again, keep
nothing that incriminating, but I guarantee you there's something. Either they both have the same story, or each of them want to tell a story on the other one. There's got to be something out there that they can tell real quick before we get off here.
What's that?
There's got to be something that you want to tell on Coach Shelton, or Coach Shelton wants to tell on you, or a mutual story you can put out there that you guys want to tell. From high school. And if it involves my son, I'm out. I don't want to know anything about it.
I don't have anything right now.
Is there something about William Byrd or
Coach? Come on, man.
I did get yelled at William Byrd one time. I took the SAT on a Saturday, came out, pitched terribly, got pulled out of the game, and then I started dancing in the dugout. And I heard about it pretty quickly.
That's true. I remember. That's true. Yeah, right, that's true.
For you, Nick, just real quick before you get out of here, what are you most looking forward to this year?
Just being able to play for the Cardinals and, you know, just try to help the team win. I think that's the biggest thing. The team is very historic and always in the playoffs, so just trying to help them get back to that position.
What's the easiest way for the community to keep up with you starting in a couple weeks?
Twitter, Facebook, if you follow any of the Cardinals accounts or get the MLB app, that's the easiest way to do it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Perfect. So, Nick, thank you so very much. I hope we can do this every single year. I'm hoping next year maybe we can have a little bit more planning. We can make it a little bit more of a different event. Maybe we can get Abe out here, Eric, Billy, something to that nature, because, you know, whole community supports you. We sincerely appreciate it. If anything you ever need from us, please reach out and hopefully I'll have me a Cardinals hat for you to sign here soon enough. Coach, is there anybody, real quick, if you get off here, is there anybody else that you've coached at Franklin County over the years that's maybe in the minor leagues now, or maybe has a chance to be?
Listen, in Nick's position? I can't give you any specific names, but I've been really lucky. Like my 12 years here, it's a lot of history, a lot of tradition of baseball. Nick's the pinnacle of that, but there were so many kids that came before him, after him, that did great things, not just in baseball, but in just life, that I'm proud of. But our history of good people playing baseball in Franklin County, good people playing baseball in Franklin County.
Do you have
that,
any other
that makes
guy,
me happy?
And the list has been tremendously long. Like, I mean, for right now, the people I would like to get on this show at some point in time, Larry Bowles, I'd like
yes,
to get him on
he's
here.
He's getting in. Actually, if I can plug right now, Salem Roanoke Baseball Hall of Fame, Larry Bowles is getting inducted this year.
Is he really? That's happening. February 4th.
Perfect. February 4th. He's getting inducted. So Larry Bowles is going into the Salem Roanoke Baseball Hall of Fame on February 4th. That's a big one.
But of whom you're a member of, correct?
What's that?
Are you a member of that?
Yes, I'm a member.
He's a member. Yep. Billy Wagner's a member. I think Eric's a member.
And Billy's speaking this year.
Abe Knapp is a member.
Billy is our keynote speaker this year.
What weekend is it?
That's February 4th.
This coming 2 weeks, next week.
2 weeks.
We're in D.C. Yeah.
We're going to be in D.C. for that big trip. But hopefully we've been back in touch with Abe Knapp. Abe will be there. I would really love here sometime in the next year to sit Abe down with Nick
and
Billy, with Eric, with Coach Shelton. I mean, let's make a big baseball.
Can I send a shout out to Coach Knapp?
Shout out whoever
Coach
you want
Knapp,
to shout out.
I'm also on the state committee for the Virginia Baseball Coaches Association, which Coach Knapp just got inducted to the Hall of Fame.
Knapp got inducted
to the Hall of Fame this past year. Well overdue.
Way overdue.
That should have happened 15 years
ago. Yeah. So Billy will be in town in a couple weeks speaking. So there'll be great stories and a good time. I was hoping that in 2 weeks I could announce him as Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Billy Wagner.
Right. Are you announcing him that night?
I don't think so. I would try to if he was the Hall of Famer.
I don't know if I could. I'd break down.
But the Salem Road Hall of Fame is a big deal.
And I know we've talked about this before on the show, but, you know, we were talking about all the base. I mean, at home tonight before I come over here, I was looking at my cards hanging up in the room, and they've got a Bobby Basham card in there as well.
Yeah.
I mean, Bobby Basham, Brian Strong, Larry Bowles.
The list goes.
Who am I missing? Casey? Hodges. Gray Hodges and Larry and wasn't Brian. Who was the other one, the third one? Fouts.
Chad Fouts.
And Larry and Gray were all on that Virginia Tech team in the late 90s, early 2000s. It was ranked, you know what I mean? Like, we have such a strong tradition here in Franklin County of baseball players. And I encourage you, look, if you listen to this show and you have a child that's growing up and likes to play baseball, get them involved early, get them involved young. Coaches. Is there any... aside from Little League around here, is there any other organization, you know, not American Legion, that kids can come around to and start getting that feeling of participating with other kids? Because Franklin County, if you bring in a few guys from Callaway, a few guys from Boone's Mill, a few guys from Snow Creek, we got one hell of a baseball is in our blood.
And that's what we have now.
So where can the littler kids go to maybe start investing themselves in the system you've got here at the high school, which is essentially located?
I think it's start with the rec department. And if that's not available, then it would be more travel baseball. But I think that once they get to the 6th, 7th grade, we got a good system in place. I have my kids. So I watched Nick play when he was in 7th grade. He was with me.
Hey, folks, we're going to cut it right there and move the rest of the show to our subscriber-only page, which you can go to at patreon.com/getontap. That's patreon.com/getontap for only a dime a day, minimum $3 a month. You can support us. Go over there, listen to our subscriber-only shows. You get shows early, all that kind of stuff. Sincerely appreciate Nick for joining us on this show, and sincerely appreciate Brian and all the folks at the Rocky Mount Burger Company for hosting us upstairs. Moving forward, hopefully a lot of our subscribers will get opportunities like they did this time to come out and hang out with Nick, meet him, some of the other guys we have on the show coming up in the future. So check on that. And go over there and check out this after show. It was a really good time. We kind of went in more detail about coaching baseball around here in this area and some of the big-time athletes we've got. And Coach Shelton talked about some of his time in the White Sox organization when they had Michael Jordan there. It was really, really fun. So go check it out. And you're helping us. You're supporting us. And we sincerely appreciate all of that. So once again, that's patreon.com/getontap. If some of you out there that make one-time donations, I've tried to find out a way to allow you into the Patreon, but it just doesn't work. The only way you can listen or subscribe is by going there and doing it yourself. I can't give freebies out. I really wish I could. I've been trying. So for anybody that has given one-time donation and doesn't really care about the subscriber stuff, you can do that at Get On Tap for Venmo or Cash App. So we sincerely appreciate everybody out there that does support us, and for your time, and for Nick and Coach Shelton, Carter Chitwood, and Rocky Mount Burger Company. Thank you so much again, and catch you over the rest of the show. It's a subscriber only.
One day I opened up an old and dusty drawer. A little rusty piece of steel fell out on the floor. As I went to pick it up, my memory came back strong. It was Daddy's pocket knife he carried for so long. As I held that rusty piece of steel there in my hand, my thoughts wandered back to that hard-working man. An old piece of steel and worn-out cattle bone, Daddy's pocket knife has finally made it home. Bought it years ago at the Angle Hardware store. Come home from work every day, his fingers cracked and sore. Come here, my son, and sit up on my knee. Let me tell you a little tale about the way things used to be. As I held that rusty piece of steel there in my hand, my thoughts wander back to that hard-working man. An old piece of steel and worn-out cattle bone, Daddy's pocket knife has finally made it home. Time on earth was near, he placed it in that drawer, knowing one day his son will find it and carry it once more. As I held that rusty piece of steel there in my hand, my thoughts wandered back to that hard-working man. An old piece of steel, worn-out cattle bone, Daddy's pocket knife has finally made it home.